This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 47, with founder of 52 Skills and TEDx speaker, Stephen Robinson.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Angles of Latitude podcast. This is the show where we talk with fellow creators about how they found their true groove in life by doing work that matters not only to them, but possibly the rest of the world. And you know, every Thursday we publish another conversation about the art and science of truly living a life of passion and how you too can do the work you're meant to do. Your hosts today are myself, JC Preston. I'm joined by my co-host, Ginger Kern. And we're part of the team at New Inceptions, a website dedicated in helping creative entrepreneurs do passion-filled work in supporting a lifestyle that defines who they are. This session is powered by the Traveler's Mindset. Yes, Ginger's Traveler's Mindset. And if you're like me or most lifestyle entrepreneurs, you've at least thought about traveling around the world. Whether you want to just live life by experiencing as many things as you can or just want to see how other people live, traveling is one of the best ways that you can express your own personal freedom. However, many of us struggle with simply going because we don't want to take the extra time to plan our journey, or we have other concerns like it might cost too much. If that sounds like you, Ginger has you covered. She has prepared a great course for you called the Travel Savvy E-Course. In it, you'll find all kinds of useful information, including how to prepare to go, dealing with the airport, what to do when you get there, and how to properly set out on your new adventure. If traveling abroad is something that you're serious about doing in your not-too-distant future, then I highly recommend checking this course out via newinceptions.com/travelsavvy. Again, that's newinceptions.com/travelsavvy. Also, don't forget that my new ebook called The Six Cornerstones of a Successful Online Business is now available. If you want to see the entire layout of your future business before you get started, then this is a must-have of your digital library. You know, in fact, just recently, I was asked by a mechanic who read a recent post of mine and how he could start using the web to build his business. And he started asking about YouTube and putting up a series of videos up. And my response to him was simply this: hey, you know, that sounds great, but before you do anything else, you need to check this ebook out so you can know what kind of work you're really going to be setting yourself up for. And then once you get through that, we can look at the YouTube series. I mean, the truth is, if you want to waste your time poking around at online business like many do, and I did for the first year, 2015, go for it. But if you don't want to waste your time, grab my free ebook at newinceptions.com/sixcornerstones, and I'm pretty sure you'll be glad you did, because it pretty much condenses everything that I learned last year into things that will highly get you structured and better situated to have more success in your business. All right, so speaking of doing new things, today's guest is someone that is all about getting out there and really just having new experiences. And in fact, he's the founder of a YouTube channel called 52 Skills. Stephen Robinson is someone that I'm proud to introduce to you guys. Not only does he have a life that, he builds one new skill at a time, but he does it because he has a passion in what he's actually doing. Even in the chat, he explains that this doesn't define him. 52 Skills doesn't define him. And if he gets tired of doing it, he's simply going to go do something else. And, you know, for me, I think that's a great sign of someone that has tapped into their own personal freedom. So in this particular chat, we're going to be talking about the idea of 52 Skills and where it came from, some of the production hacks he's learned to keep videos coming on a regular basis, and how he stays engaged in his work. We also talk about how he got ready for his TEDx talk that he only had a week to prepare for. So don't forget to check out the show notes available at newinceptions.com/session47. And as usual, I'll be on the other end of the conversation to fill in anything we might have missed. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. I'm JC, and joined again by the awesome Ginger Kern. Hey, Ginger, how you doing?
I am well, JC. Thanks so much for having me back on. I'm super stoked for this particular episode and interviewing friend of mine.
Yeah, right? Hey. Yeah, always a pleasure to have you on. And speaking of another friend of yours, you recently saw Cam over in San Diego, which, you know, I think you were visiting there for a conference, if I remember right. And where else have your travels taken you recently?
Yeah, so I was in LA for that conference and then decided to pop down and spend some quality time with Cam, who is just awesome. I mean, I know he was on your show. We've been friends for a while now. And Steven, you actually know him. Steven's our guest today.
I know Cam, yep.
Woohoo! So, we actually went over the border into Mexico just for a day trip because I know if you listen to my episode on Angles of Latitude, you know that I love to travel. You know that international travel is my specialty. And it's kind of crazy, but I actually had never been to Mexico before. Mm. So I figured if I was 20 minutes from the border, why not just drive out there?
With all the places that you have been, I'm surprised that you hadn't been there. But yeah, you might as well. 20 minutes, why not? For sure.
Exactly. And hey, it was super easy too. Like literally you take your passport, you park on the San Diego side, you walk to the border crossing, hand them your passport. They look at it. They look at you funny. And judge you. And then they stamp it. And then like, boom, you're in Mexico. So it was a lot of fun. I mean, we ate some amazing food. Dude, it's totally worth the day trip just for the food alone. So I highly recommend it.
And I've been constantly told that even as shady as it might seem to those that are in the U.S. and we're used to the U.S. world and how clean we are over here, that it's totally normal and okay to have really strange food from the street, which you see a heck of a lot apparently down there just as soon as you skip over to the other side of the border. So
exactly. It's really just the water that you've got to watch out for. So that was no problem.
Literally.
Yeah, exactly. So
one of the places that you've also mentioned that at one point that you've experienced was going over to a place called Burning Man. And I've heard a lot of things about that from different creatives in the podcasting world. And, you know, that for me, kind of like how I observed Las Vegas when I was in college, I really didn't have the money to, you know, kind of delve into it. It was something that I always wanted to kind of observe, I guess you see, and just kind of take it in. Right. I guess Burning Man is one of those things as well. It's just kind of like, just check it out. And in fact, today's guest is where you met him at Burning Man, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yep, that's exactly right. Today's guest is a very, very hardcore adventurer, and we actually spent a week in a yurt together at Burning Man. So that should give you a little bit of background. That guy is Stephen Robinson, founder of 52 Skills, Skills with a Z. So, hey, yep. Stephen, thanks for coming with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And just to correct you, 52 Skills is based in Canada, so it's actually 52 Skills with a Z. I'm just to throw that out there just for the rest of the podcast.
A Z.
Subtle thing. It's Canada Day. We got to respect the Z.
Oh, Canada.
Yeah. Ha ha. That was a good one.
I had to.
Very subtle.
Well, we'll pour some maple syrup on it. We'll like get some elk and moose together and we'll, you know, do all the stereotypical things to celebrate.
Right, back bacon, you know, play some road hockey, all that good stuff.
God save the queen. There you go. Well, I'm so, so stoked to talk to you today, Stephen, and also for JC to get to know you, for all the listeners to get to know you, because you're just a rad dude. You're an adventurous guy. You're into entrepreneurship. You've got a ton of drive, a ton of ambition, and you care about a lot of things that I imagine all of us care about regarding building community. So I just want to start by doing a little bit of a background check-in on you, like a background check. Right. So what have you been up to in life? Like, who are you really? Like, I saw that you studied psychology. I know that at university. JC and I have been into that since high school. So
In fact, when I was in high school, and my
most influential teachers that I was ever with, ever had, was a psych teacher. And he was actually a little bit of a motivational speaker. And it was so much so that he was like always asked to be, you know, the high school speech giver. You know, there's always that like a teacher that does a speech at the high school graduations, right? Mm-hmm. And so he was always asked to be that person. So for me, psychology always kind of stuck out. And that was something that when I was in college, I also got a minor in. And even to an extent, my grad work was in how psychology plays a role in the work field, in the work world. So yeah, definitely a buff in that myself. And I guess I'm kind of curious, how did you pick your major? Stephen?
Yeah, yes. That's a super duper funny story. And I think that the more that I like tell people my story and go over it in my head and really just whittle it down, a lot of it is just coming down to putting myself in situations where there's a lot of external expectation and social force bearing down on me. And then I just make a decision and say, can I swear on this, or do you prefer not swearing? Like just saying like
PG-13. How about that?
Okay. Just saying like, screw it. I'm just going for it. So how did I choose my major? I've always had friends that are probably like a year or two older than me in high school. I had, all of my good friends were graduated when I was in grade 12. So I spent a lot of time with them at university. Mm-hmm. And I really, really wanted to continue hanging out with them. When I graduated high school, so I ended up going to the same university as them, mostly because I wanted to play in a band with those guys. Those guys I was in a band with, and I was like, I don't want to like stay in this small town and keep having to like drive back and forth. So what I did is I said, well, what is like something that I could be interested in? What is something that seems easy? And what is something that has a lot of girls in it? And then I was like, psychology. And then I got into it and I was like, wow, this is like, this not only has a lot of girls in it, it's also super duper interesting.
Yeah, right?
So, yeah. So kind of going from there, I continued on with my university degree. And the first year of university was very much classic American pie sort of party and learn about how to live on your own, living off grilled cheese and pizza and smoothies and stuff. And then second year university, I became part of this kind of entrepreneurial community I can't even remember how I got there, but I became part of that community. And that was a huge, huge pivotal moment for me. Mm-hmm. in saying, okay, so Stephen, you're not just a guy who wants to be in a band and is at school for no particular reason other than to like hang out with his buddies. You actually have a lot of potential to influence and help a lot of other people. So kind of through plugging into that entrepreneurial community, I ended up starting my own company. And within 2 years, we did close to $500,000 in revenue, employed about 15 people, decided to sell it because even though the company financially was doing really well, it was not satisfying to run. It was extremely stressful. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like it was having the impact that it should be having. And then I decided to learn a new skill every single week for an entire year and document the process. And that's what 52 skills became. So that's kind of like the ultra condensed version of my story from high school to 5 years later and training to solve a Rubik's Cube while skydiving. I was training for an hour just like practicing this Rubik's Cube in front of a high powered fan. I'm not even kidding.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Did it accurately represent the feeling of the wind rushing in your face and your mouth when you're skydiving?
Oh, hell no. I don't know. I've never skydived before, so I'm not sure.
Oh, you haven't done it yet.
I would have thought that would have been like your top 10. Like,
yeah.
but what do you mean? Oh, for like 52 skills?
Yeah.
The first ones I did?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, I think that that comes back to a lot of the learning that I've gotten through 52 skills. One of the bigger takeaways is if you want to be like a big deal, quote unquote, online. You can't just like depend on doing cool things to move you forward, because anyone can do cool things, and there's so much information online and so many people doing cool stuff online that it's super easy to get lost in the ether of the cool stuff. So if we're talking about like skydiving, there are a billion different videos of people going skydiving. So if I go skydiving, it's like, yeah, this is Stephen 52 Skills, and here's how you go skydiving. It's like, well, I don't really want to watch that because I've seen that 100 times. Mm-hmm. But if it's like, hey, I'm going skydiving, and I'm also learning how to solve a Rubik's Cube from scratch, and then I'm going to try and solve it while skydiving, then people are going to be like, holy shit, I can't believe that like this guy's trying it. So yeah, it's all about
the novelty.
Well, I think it's just it's about like taking something that is that people have done before and then putting your own spin on it in a way that's unique, or in a way that like makes people go, huh, like that's really interesting, or connecting it back in your blog post or your video or whatever it is in a way that shows that you put a lot of thought and effort into making it creative, and you're not just doing it because skydiving is cool. Right. You know, I don't know if that makes sense. I felt like a rant, but
yeah. Well, what, you know, you're working on these things, your YouTube channel and then 52 Skills with a Z, sorry. I guess we also saw that you are the space manager for the eHub. At University of Alberta. So let's start with 52 Skills first. Just for people who have no idea what it's about, you did say that little short sentence pitch, but can you tell us a little bit more about how the concept got started? Like, where did you get the idea for it, you know?
Yeah, so 52 Skills birth kind of happened out of a whole bunch of different things, but the thing that I like to kind of pinpoint it on is there was, my friend had a birthday about 2.5 years ago, and for whatever reason, I just had this desire to make something really special for her birthday. So rather than just like writing on her Facebook wall, like, happy birthday, smiley face, I wanted to learn how to moonwalk while playing happy birthday on guitar. And I just did it as a fun thing.
It's a little bit higher than posting a meme, too.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if you create something, people will really appreciate that, you know?
Totally.
Sometimes honestly, like the happy birthday wall thing, if people just post happy birthday, I'm like, that's kind of lame. Like you put zero effort into that. I haven't talked to you in 3 years. Why are you posting happy birthday on my wall? Anyways, that's not relevant. So I learned how to moonwalk and play happy birthday on guitar. Just put it up there as like a thing that was fun and hopefully that she enjoyed. And then a whole bunch of people reacted really positively to it. I was like, wow, I've always wanted to learn how to moonwalk. And this actually made me do it. And I started to think more and more about how I could create an external situation, going back to that whole social forces concept that that I spoke about earlier, where it's just typically most of the decisions in my life have been made around like how much social force is pushing me towards doing this thing. Mm-hmm. So I decided, yeah, I'm just going to commit myself to learning a new skill every single week, tell all my friends that I'm doing it. And then I did. So
rad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Easy.
So really it was just, it just was born out of, I want to do all these things. There's the trigger point of me learning how to moonwalk and play happy birthday on guitar. And then me saying, wow, like the social force of people positively reinforcing these videos, and me feeling responsible for producing these videos, forced me to, in a way, quote unquote, forced me to develop 52 skills to,
yeah, totally.
Where it's at now. Yeah.
So there's no indirect influence by Tim Ferriss, is what you're saying. It's completely-
I would say, yeah. So that's a really interesting comment. I think that yeah, as far as like Tim Ferriss goes, I think that there is a, in some way, Tim Ferriss has influenced an incredible amount of people to become entrepreneurs or at least try to be entrepreneurial, or give the impression that they're entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. I think I know that like the Tim Ferriss comment was meant as kind of like an aside, but I think that Tim Ferriss is like responsible for inspiring an incredible amount of millennials to try and like start online businesses or whatever it is.
When it wasn't so much the fact that I was commenting on the fact that he was the entrepreneur type person, it's just the fact that you and him share. I mean, there's a lot of people that are online business people, but you and him share specifically like the skill learning how to do things on a very short period of time.
And
that's kind of what I was pointing at, is that you really don't hear about that too much. And so that's why I was, you know, making that connection. I was just like, huh. So if it works for Tim and it works for Steven, it must be a thing there. So
yeah, totally. And you know what the funny thing is that I read the 4-Hour Work Week, didn't know anything about the 4-Hour Chef before I started 52 Skills. And after I decided to start 52 Skills, that's when I started to see like Tim's TV show and all that stuff. So yeah, it wasn't born out of like, oh, Tim Ferriss is doing it, I can do it. It was more like, oh, like I read Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week. That was cool. Started 52 Skills and then saw Tim Ferriss was doing it. And it was like, fucking Tim Ferriss.
PG-13.
Yeah, sorry. Flipping Tim Ferriss, that guy.
Oh, man. But hey, so that said, like, do you have favorite skills that you've picked up?
Favorite skills that I've picked up. That's really interesting. And you know what I'm doing right now, you can't see, but I'm literally going into my channel and I'm going through the skills because I've done so many that it's really hard to pull them out. I think one of the really funny ones was how to become an Amazon bestseller. I think it was
a
more underrated skill, but it was basically I wrote a pseudo book. So it wasn't even a real book. And posted it on the Amazon bookstore. It had like 4 or 5 pages, and then posted it in a relatively like small category, and then asked 10 of my friends to buy it, and then I became a number one bestseller in the span of like 4 hours.
Nice.
Which I think is
so ironic.
Super funny, because there's a lot of people who kind of wave that around as a way of being like, hey, like, Look at how legit I am. I'm an Amazon bestseller. When really, if you like break it down to its parts, it's a fairly superficial award.
Right.
But yeah, I thought that I freaking love that one. How to make people think you're good at graffiti was awesome. Was an awesome one from this year.
I love that.
yeah. It was super fun. I really developed my typography skills from it. Really the general outcome from that one was do layering, make your letters really big and make your letters look bold and it'll look okay. that's another one. I spent 30 days straight catching toast in different ways, which is kind of a skill, I guess, but I thought it was just
I'm hilarious. Sorry, did you say catching toast?
Yeah. So catching toast out of a toaster. So I made like a high powered toaster. So I switched out the spring in the toaster so that when the toaster would go off, the toaster would shoot up in the air.
That's
right. Yeah, I caught it in 30 different ways for Snapchat challenge. That was sweet. Learned how to hotwire a car. That was awesome. Super satisfying. We spent like 3 hours on it trying to figure it out, and it was one of those situations where it was like, man, we totally could have given up, and we had no idea that what we were doing was right, and then boom, all of a sudden it worked, and that was really cool.
I was just gonna say one of the most recent ones that I noticed is how to pick a lock, and did that come from a need specifically, or did you get inspired with that one? I got to say.
Yeah. So that came actually more out of necessity than anything else, because, I live in an area. It's like a fairly, it's a weird area where there's a lot of wealthy people living in it, but there's also a lot of students living in it, mm-hmm. and it's close to downtown, so there's a lot of homeless people. So it's a place that you don't really want to leave like spare keys out, because there's quite often break-ins that happen in this area. So I locked myself out of my house about a couple weeks before I started that skill, and I had to break a window to get back in. So I was like, well, I don't want to have to do that again. So right. I learned how to pick a lock so I could get back into my house.
Sounds like you have a little bit of Sherlock in you, having to
yeah.
get in there.
Yeah, yeah, kind of like unsettlingly easy to get into people's houses if you really try.
Good to know. Yeah. So are you going to be like Edmonton's newest cat burglar now? Or?
Yeah,
I mean.
yeah. If I don't start making more money off of 52 skills, that might be a necessary thing. Well,
the reason I brought up Sherlock right there is because if you have seen or heard of the show Elementary with Lucy Liu, and I forget what the actor's actual name is, in that particular show, now that we're bringing it up, he spends a lot of time trying to learn different skills himself so that he can understand the people that they're trying to catch better.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so one of the things that you see all the time in their house is this, like, I don't know, cage wall, at least a fence, right? That's like, you know, metal and whatnot. And like, and all along it is a whole bunch of different locks that he like goes through and like times himself. Cool. As he's going through them. So, yeah, I mean, definitely once you start training your brain how to do stuff, then you start seeing the world in a completely different perspective, I'd think.
Yeah, 100%. I think like a really big takeaway from 52 Skills is like the idea of like you just got to fail a whole bunch of times. And I know it's super cliche, but to not give up. And eventually, if you spend... you could spend an hour on picking a freaking lock and nothing happens, and all of a sudden it happens and you're like, wow, it's possible. And then you're reinforced to like keep doing it. Mm-hmm. Same thing with hot wiring the car. It would have been so easy to give up and be like, oh, I'll just do a different skill this week. But we kept going, called some people for help, kept going, and eventually ended up working. So yeah, no, it's a really interesting takeaway that like once you start learning skills a lot, and you get into that kind of mindset of failure is okay mm-hmm. to learn this skill, and like I'm failing, therefore I am growing. That's a really powerful thing, and I think it's super super important for people, whether they're starting a business, learning a new skill, or trying to make big changes in their life.
That's awesome. And hey, since you say that,
or trying to be a crack detective, no,
exactly, yeah. If you're trying to break into someone's house, just never give up.
Right,
never give up. You're like the newest motivational speaker too. That's perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
So then, if someone were starting out, and like you said, it's a mindset to grow into, and it's like a habit to practice. Mm-hmm. If someone wanted to start out, like learning new skills, or you know, doing something that's out of their comfort zone, whether, you know me, I'm all about travel and pushing your comfort zone that way, but I love that you take it and you take it in a different direction of doing, like taking on skills that you can do in your everyday life. You don't have to go anywhere to do it. You can be curious and like ask your friends about what crazy stuff they know about to like gather ideas. So yeah, like if someone were new and wanting to start out with this type of mindset, how would you tell them to begin? Would it be by watching your videos on YouTube, or would it be by like something totally different?
I mean, if I was a smart marketer, then I would say, yes, watch my videos on YouTube. but like, I don't think that's like vital, honestly, to learning new skills. I think it would help because it gives you some perspective on how to, it gives you an example of someone who has been constantly failing and relearning and developing over the past almost year and a half now, but as far as like starting, so let's like use the example of let's just assume that you don't know how to juggle, Ginger, and you want to learn how to juggle.
Well, that's perfect because I don't and I do.
Perfect. Okay. So what I would say to you is that, okay, so Ginger, you've wanted to learn how to juggle for a long time, but you haven't taken any action on it. It seems like you need something holding you accountable to learn how to juggle. Mm-hmm. And then what I would say is, and what I'd be willing to bet is that if you went to like some close friends of yours or family or whatever it is, and you said, I will give you $200 if I don't learn how to juggle by the end of like this month, that you will learn how to juggle. Mm-hmm. Or if you just post on Facebook and say, I'm going to learn how to juggle by the 14th, and I'm going to have a video of me juggling up on Facebook by the 14th. Those two things, they're different types of motivation. One is financial and one is social. Mm-hmm. But that creates like a system of accountability for you to actually take action and learning how to juggle, rather than just saying, I want to learn how to juggle, and then having to compete with all of the other things that you're working on, right? So,
yep.
So what I mean by that is that most of us have just an incredible amount of things going on in our lives that have actual consequences if we don't complete them. But a lot of these skills that we want to learn don't really have anything holding us accountable. So you have to put those skills into the same space that you have everything else in.
So prioritize them just as you would everything else.
Yeah. So prioritize is a good word. And I think just like creating a system of accountability that mm-hmm. is no different than like your work life, or if you were like playing, say you're in a band and you have to learn a song and you're playing that song live to 2,000 people in a couple of days. Of course, you're going to learn that song. You shouldn't treat juggling or anything else like that any different.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's all by choice. I love that. Like it's for fun. Like that is the purpose, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just like be having more fun in life and kind of be a more interesting person. I mean, I that's at least what I get from what you're doing, because I think you're super interesting. So
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. I think that, And I think sometimes people relate, like creating accountability around something with, now you've removed the fun from that, but I think that's a huge mindset thing.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. Cool. Well, that said, I'm going to take on that juggling challenge and
it's
July 1st, 2016. Okay. And by the end of July, I will send you a video of me juggling. Okay, Steven?
I'm so stoked to see that.
Okay, great.
Awesome.
Thanks.
So from a production point of view, though, I got a really kind of an interesting question here. And this is just, as I'm going through your videos, I realize that everything is on time. I mean, I see four videos from 5 months ago, four videos from 4 months ago, three to recently.
Yeah.
How do you get ready to do a show, and how do you keep your material coming out on a regular basis?
Yeah, that's a good question. So like originally when I started 52 Skills, right before I started, I had literally all 52 skills for the first season planned out, and I had everything worked out. I was like, this is perfect. These are the skills that I'm going to learn this week and the skills that I'm going to learn in May and blah, 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 blah. And then I got 2 weeks into it and I scrapped the whole thing because I was like, nah, these aren't going to work. This is going to be the most boring YouTube channel of all time. So what I try and do is I usually have about four skills planned at a time. So whether that's like having people lined up to teach me how to do them, or just like different skills that I think will be relevant to what's going on during that time. Which is something I have to do more of, because every single time I do a skill on a trending video or something, doesn't matter if it's like a boring skill, it gets a ton of views and I get a lot more subscribers.
Can you give an example? Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. So one of them was how to do the Nick Jonas guitar solo at the ACM Awards. If you guys don't know what happened, Nick Jonas did a guitar solo and it totally sucked. It was like the worst guitar solo in the world, and it was going viral. So I made a video on how to do it. It wasn't like an amazingly shot video of me doing graffiti or a TEDx talk or like swinging a sword and cutting a cabbage in half in slow motion. It was just literally just a video of me sitting in front of the screen playing guitar like poorly, and people dug it. So my biggest skill of yet is how to flip a water bottle to impress your friends. I posted it 4 weeks ago. It has like 81,000 views. It's been getting a couple thousand views a day. I've almost like my subscriber base has almost doubled since I posted that freaking video. And it's a great video, but the main thing is that it's getting out to people because people are searching it a lot. So yeah, so JC, like, this is a long-winded answer to your question. I have about four skills planned out, but it's very organic, and I try and keep it so that if something like that comes up, that I have a day or two that I can just drop everything, produce a skill, post it up, and then get more views. Yeah.
Cool. So it is 4 weeks, more or less 4 weeks ahead then. Mm-hmm. Okay. And yeah, as far as the actual production then, I mean, again, your background is in psychology. Do you do your own video work then, or?
Yeah, so I do everything myself. The very first video that I edited was the very first video on this channel, which I think is very true to the whole theme of the channel. Mm-hmm. So I learned video production and editing while I was developing the channel. And I think that now I went from being a guy who it took 30 hours to edit a freaking video and was like so careful with everything. I can produce a video that I'm a lot more confident in, that I think is a lot higher quality, and probably like six to eight hours. That doesn't include learning the skill. I do everything.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
And how long do you think it took you to, how many, like 30, 40? How many videos?
To get confident in my skill set?
Yeah.
I still think I have room to grow, but I think I've just recently kind of fallen on a format that is working really, really well. If you want to do what I'm doing, just spend 80 weeks learning a new skill every week, and then you'll figure out your format. It's easy.
Nice.
Yeah. But to answer your question, JC, it's like I feel very confident in where I'm at right now, but I know there's a lot of room to grow. So I don't think there'll ever be a point where I'm like, yeah, I know what I'm doing 100% with this editing and filming. And I think once it gets to that point, 52 skills will no longer be satisfying to me, because a huge motivation for this is the growth and
reevaluation. That's so meta, man.
Yeah.
Because one of the underlying skills is video editing.
Oh man, it's an iceberg, man. Like you the skills that you see on the channel are, that's the tip of the iceberg. The rest of it is like learning how to build a website, learning how to promote yourself, learning SEO, tagging, mm-hmm. editing, video production, how to like network with people, how to ask people to like let you do stuff for free. You know, like that's such a foreign concept to me.
You could basically do 50 Skills Business Edition. Exactly. You know,
totally.
It's kind of like an incubator to like develop the skills that you would need in any sort of entrepreneurial situation. Anyway, putting yourself out there, the marketing, the sales, the making the asks, the pitches, all of it.
Yeah, no, and that's really the hard part. Like the easy part for me is the creating. I mean, I think it is for everyone else. I mean, if you look at like, if we use an example of like a tech startup as an example of what I do and like an allusion to that, the engineers of a tech startup, typically they'll just build something that they think is cool and they love that process. The hard thing is talking to the customers, figuring out what they want and figuring out what a good ask is. That's exactly the same with 52 skills. I love creating content, but the hardest thing is like actually spending some time and saying, okay, how can I make money off of this? How can I support myself with this? And then asking your viewers to do it. It is so freaking hard to ask people to support you when you're creating something that you think is really great, but do you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, for me kind of clicked recently, especially this past year, It's like maybe get some of that early feedback first before you like go out of your way and make it. And then as you're developing it, be like, oh, hey, this is what you wanted. Is this what you're looking? Oh, yeah. And then they actually give you money. That's at least in the business world, been a great lesson for me. As far as the creative thing, don't know how that applies to being an artist, for example. So still working on that one.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really, really hard. Especially when like you're confident in your craft, but like there's so much insecurity around your own art that it's like, do I ask people to like pay for this thing? Like, do people see value in it? It's a constant struggle, and I'm getting a lot better at it, but it's still not nearly where it should be.
Got it.
Yeah.
Interesting. So then that said, you're funding this project yourself and you've just started to get some outside funding, but I'm curious for people who, you know, they're starting their own venture or whatever it might be, project, and they're looking at how to split their time between, you know, the project, the passion project that might not be 100% funded yet, right? And then looking to sustain themselves and pay their bills and whatever else that they have to pay for. How do you work that out in your own life?
Well, like I would say that that's kind of what the stage I'm in right now, because like 52 Skills my main sources of revenue through 52 Skills would be public speaking and video production. And the video production side of it is just more people see my stuff through 52 Skills and then they reach out to me and say, hey, can you make a video? But at this point, it's not enough to completely sustain myself. So that's kind of where, part-time job comes into play. So yeah, I mean, I don't like to generalize because it totally depends on what situation the person is and like what they're able to do. But I think the best thing to do, for a passion project is to I'm gonna switch this around. The worst freaking thing you could do is quit your job and start a passion project. I think that is like the dumbest, most romantic, like meme, Facebook meme worthy thing in the entire world. You know, where it's like a picture of a sunset and it's a silhouette of like a couple holding each other. It's like this couple quit their jobs and started their own passion project. Now they're traveling the world. And like, that's usually not how it works. So I think that like moving into it in a pragmatic and step by step process makes a lot more sense. And then you'll find out if it's something that you actually want to do and if it's something that people see value in before you go, I'm going to quit my career.
Awesome. Well, I think you make a great point there because a lot of people, they do romanticize it and they want the dream, but the patience and just the consistency of action that is required to build up something that's sustainable on the side, that takes some time. You know?
Oh yeah. It's so hard. And I think really like if we go back to the whole like conversation with me trying to monetize 52 Skills, that is really, really hard. And that's not the fun part of 52 Skills. And I think a lot of people when they look at like the tip of the iceberg of the whole self-employment thing, of the whole follow your dream thing, all they see is the creativity and they don't see the hustle. They don't see the clients that you spend 2 months working with that drop off the map. They don't, you know, like it's just, there's a lot more to it. And a lot of times it can be a lot harder than having a job, you know, like almost every couple of days, I'm like, frick, I should just like get a freaking job. You know, it's like, it's very easy to get exhausted from the hustle.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and, but- Well, I got one question. In regards to what you guys are talking about there, what would, if someone were to find themselves in a career transition and there was always this one thing that they wanted to do, but might not necessarily have the resources to continue doing it, what would be a kind of a strategy you would help them develop in doing that then?
So like, what do you mean by that question? You mean, so let's just say like they were a teacher, they quit their job as a teacher, now they have no income, and now they're like, oh, I want to start this passion project. Is that kind of the situation that you're?
Yes. Let's just say, yeah. Let's go with that.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I mean, it all depends on your situation financially. I mean, if you have zero savings, obviously don't start your own thing. But like, if you have like $30,000 of savings in the bank account, I think it would be worth it to put some time into developing your skill set and developing this business that you have. But there are so many different factors that would play into whether or not I would think that would be like a smart decision. Like, do you have a family? Do you have all of these different things? But I think it's still my answer is the same, is to move into it step by step and pragmatically. Because to jump fully into something without knowing if there is, without like knowing if you're going to be able to pay rent,
yeah,
6 months down the road, whatever.
And even on top of that, I guess I was going to come back around to my answer is just take advantage of the sharing economy that we happen to be living in too.
Totally. Yeah. Great point.
Yeah. So what do you mean by that?
Oh, I was just saying that, you know, one of my favorite examples happens to be the Uber driver that at the same, you know, he's very passionate about jewelry. And so he put all of his jewelry examples or over time in his car, and people would be asking him about his jewelry. But at the same time, he's making money through Uber. I mean, nice. There's just so many other sharing things out there. I mean, you can babysit dogs now. You can, you know, rent out isn't that what Airbnb is essentially? Is that if you're not there, you can rent out your pad or something like that?
Yeah.
Right? And then there's, you know, obviously we touched on the Uber and the Lyft thing. You can pick up people's groceries. There's that. I mean, you don't necessarily have to pick up a job, I guess is what I was getting to. That's going to take a lot of energy out of you. You can, you know, set yourself onto one of these things and do that instead.
Yeah, totally. Like there are a whole bunch of different ways to make some income in a non-sexy way while doing something that is super
sexy.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, like you said, you're working a part-time job at the eHub, which is definitely entrepreneurial in nature. And I'm guessing you're still kind of at least a little bit stimulated by that. And you get some sort of like fulfillment out of it just because it is values aligned with the rest of the stuff that you're doing. So I'm kind of curious, like what type of people does the eHub bring in? Like, what culture are you around? Because I think the fear is for a lot of people who are taking on outside work like Uber or Lyft or maybe something that's a little bit less mentally engaging, that they'll feel not engaged in their work, even if it's the passion work. And I'm wondering, like, how is that going for you? Does that work out or not?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think there's kind of two parts to that question. So like, I'll talk about eHub and then I'll talk about what it's like to be a YouTuber in a city that has like two YouTubers. So the first one, so eHub is really great. It's an entrepreneurial student incubator on campus where students who have startup ideas can come in and we provide them with the resources and network and mentoring for them to start their own companies. We've had a couple of companies come out of eHub and go down to Silicon Valley and be part of Y Combinator and all these like amazing incubators. So it just started. So I really enjoy that for the reason of it's a cross faculty, basically like superhero finder on campus. You find all of the most ambitious people find themselves there and end up working there. So it's a really, really cool place to work. And I think that's part of like, what helps me stay connected in a culture of entrepreneurship while being in a city that maybe isn't necessarily the most well known for being an entrepreneurial city. Mm-hmm. So I would say that is like so freaking vital. If you want to start your own tech startup or if you want to become a coach or start your own YouTube channel, is finding that tribe of people that you can relate to and have like share similar war stories with. Because it's a very, very lonely life being an entrepreneur or a YouTuber.
Without
community or without anyone to talk to about it. So, yeah. So then going back to that with the second part of your question. What's it like being like the only YouTuber in Edmonton? There's a couple different answers to that question. First off, it's great because I get a lot of attention. Like it's the amount of coolness, the coolness factor of this channel is a lot lower in order for me to get media attention than it would be in places like LA.
Sure.
But I mean, I think that the advantages of that are greatly shadowed by the disadvantages of there's like two or three other people who are serious about YouTubing in Edmonton, so it's really hard to like grow that network of people to collab with and to relate with and share stories with and stuff. So it can be a lonely life, but the main message of maybe this podcast is like follow your dreams, but expect them to be like totally different than what like you imagine them to be when you start doing it. But
nice
it's still worth it. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And thank God for the internet, because then you can like connect with friends everywhere.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a little bit different connecting with friends over the internet than being able to like give them hugs and high fives and share a beer with them.
Go to Burning Man with them.
Yeah, it's like sleep in a super hot, sweaty yurt with them.
That was epic, by the way. I'm really
that was epic. That was crazy. That you know what was like even more crazy? Driving back to Edmonton
with the yurt on
bouncing all over my car. Yeah. That was insane.
For those uneducated, what's a yurt?
Yeah, so a yurt is like it's a building that is built out of insulation foam that is often used in extreme weather conditions for like researchers and different adventurers or like hunters. Like a lot of hunters have yurts out in the middle of a forest when they go hunting during the winter. Mm. And a lot of people also bring yurts to Burning Man to sleep in. Mm-hmm. The problem with my situation is that I have a car that doesn't fit those panels inside of it. So I had to strap these like light panels to the top of my car and drive for 35 hours with those panels strapped to the top of my car, going boom, 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 boom for 35 hours. and then like almost like having a panic attack every time a semi drives by. It's like woo, 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 woo. So it's horrifying.
Okay.
That's cool. Yeah, exactly what you're saying though is that I can totally relate, because again, you know, Indiana, we're trying to really make ourselves more of like a Silicon Valley, I guess you can say. Indianapolis, we have what's called Verge, and they've done a great job there building up a lot of the incubators that are within our state. And exactly what you're talking about, you know, when I was at Purdue, we had an incubator there that was just, you know, office of I can't think of what it stands for, OEM or something like that. And basically the school works with the inventor and then the department of where they actually created their idea. And then once they get out of that, then they take it to say Indy or a larger place and build it up from there. So yeah, a lot of tech things going on. It's just that, you know, I think one of the things that we can't forget when it comes to entrepreneurs in general is that there's just, you know, there's tech, but there's a lot of other things out there. And just because that might be all you see highlighted in your college career is tech, don't forget that you can do other things.
Totally.
You know, so.
Yeah. And I think, that's a really interesting topic as well. Cause I was thinking about it the other day, and I think there's like different, like elitist tiers of entrepreneurship in the world right now, because entrepreneurship has become such a popular word that people like to throw it around in really any situation that they can. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was thinking like, wow, like how do you like tier entrepreneurship into the different levels of like what people perceive entrepreneurship to be? Mm-hmm. Because yeah, there like I don't know if there is necessarily different levels, but if you think about like it's a lot different starting a contracting company than it would be to build up a completely new idea from the ground up, right?
Right.
Like those are two very different forms of entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if this is really adding to your point or taking away from it.
No, it's totally dead on. And in fact, I think whatever business that you go through, you always go through the four main tiers. And I call it the freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior level of entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And I have a post about this, and I'll link it in the show notes. But basically, the idea is that, you know, for your freshman and your sophomore time, and it's not going to be a year, it's just going to be time, and however long that's going to be, you're going to be figuring out maybe what your clarity is during your freshman period. And then your sophomore is that's when you're really starting to hit your head against the wall and seeing really what works and building even more clarity and figuring out what doesn't work exactly.
Yeah.
And really just, you know, learning from the people that have made it more so. This is really like your trial period. And then you start moving into your junior period, which is like some things are working, but you haven't quite scaled yet. And I think that's kind of where you're at. And then you go into the senior level, and then it's like, you know, super senior or whatever you want to call it after that. But that's basically where you're, you know, talking about the people that have made it. And, you know, you're on your YouTube, you would have what your Jenna Marbles and, you know, all those types of people, the Fine Brothers and all those, because I remember when the Fine Brothers started, and it's just like, And then in their first year, they freaking win a Grammy. And it's like, what?
That's insane.
Yeah. So, I mean,
what did they win a Grammy for?
It was like, online video or daytime video or something really obscure, but they won a Grammy, and I'll link that too. So,
that's amazing.
Super impressive.
And then now everyone hates them.
Yeah, right? It's
Welcome to the internet.
What's like the craziest comment that you've gotten so far on YouTube?
Oh man, that is such a hard question because craziest, like if it's craziest in like
you can't read it that great.
I mean there's like the most hurtful comments, or it could be like what is like the most uplifting comment. I don't get a lot of weird comments on my channel. I would say like the different comments I get would either be super supportive, super mean, or people trying to promote their own channels.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all you get. On Reddit you get some like pretty like harsh stuff if you're promoting on Reddit and stuff like that. That is something you got to prepare yourself mentally for if you decide to
self-promote.
Start being a YouTuber or becoming like an quote unquote influencer. You got to be prepared for people to find everything that is wrong with you and like put a spotlight on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and speaking of spotlights, perfect segue into TEDx. So you gave a TEDx talk. Hey, The Curious Person's Guide to Learning Anything. And I think if I recall correctly, you did it in under a week from learning that you had been invited to give the talk. Is that right?
Yeah. So the story behind it is that I about 5 days before the conference, the organizers emailed me and said, hey, we had someone drop out and you were next on the list. Do you want to do a TEDx talk? And I was like, yeah, sweet. Like, when is it? And they were like, this Saturday. And I was like, holy shit. So I agreed to it in like classic 52 skills fashion. And the general story, which is embedded in the TEDx talk, is that I initially was like, wow, this is going to be the greatest talk ever. And then fell off the transition curve into a pool of despair of like, this is going to be the worst thing ever. Everyone's going to hate it. Like, everyone's going to think that I'm like this just lucky entitled little kid who got this TEDx talk. And then I continued working on it. And Friday night at about 2 a.m., I finally figured out something that was good. and I got about 4 hours of sleep, and then the next day I practiced and then did the TEDx talk at night. So it was it was up there on one of the most stressful weeks of my entire life. But it was worth it because I produced something that I can be proud of, and I think it came out really well.
I totally agree. I loved it. Yeah, and yeah, you're welcome. I definitely recommend anyone listening, check it out. Like I said, it's a curious person's guide to learning anything. And I guess just to tack on to what you just said, like if you're looking to do something epic, what do you think about intentionally putting that sort of time-bound, pressure-inducing deadline on yourself? Like, I know you said accountability before,
yeah,
but this is like this is another level, total other level. So
yeah.
No, I know you said it's stressful, but was it worth it?
Totally. Like, I think if you want to do anything incredible, or just do freaking anything, you got to put some accountability and you got to put a deadline around it. That is absolutely vital to getting really anything done. That's why, like, you need deadlines in your homework. It's why, like, your corporate job has different deadlines and reviews and stuff. It's just how our human brains work. Is that we need something holding us accountable, and we need a sense of urgency in order to get things done. And if you don't have that, I think it's very unlikely that really anything or anything like meaningful or huge will ever get done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great point. Well, thanks so much for sharing about that, because that's something I think a lot of people avoid. I know I avoid it because it's like, I don't want to induce pressure on myself. I want life to be easy and relaxing.
But you got to.
You have to. Yeah.
Yeah. Like if you were stressed, and I guess, no, I don't think this is like universally true at all, but I'm going to say it anyways. If you were like stressed all the time working on like your dream, and that stress was coming out of like things that you had planned as like smart solutions to moving your dream forward, I think that you would be in a situation where your dream was a reality and you were making income off that very quickly, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah. And the fulfillment that comes out of that type of stress is way different from fulfillment or the lack of fulfillment that comes out of not purposeful stress.
Well, and it really doesn't even have to be like huge things like TEDx. It can just be regular, just, you know, days,
milestones
that or even weeks that you know that you're going to be publishing a post on such a day, and then you're going to be releasing a video on such a day. And on another day, you're going to be doing, you know, releasing your podcast if you're like Pat Flynn. And then that regularity then teaches your brain how to work on its own. And I think that's part of the reason why, for example, again, Pat is now a speaker, because he's, you know, his brain is used to programming itself these milestones. And that's how he's been able to get to that next level.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Cool.
Yeah.
Just to kind of move along here, you've done the TEDx, you have done the 52 skills, and you're kind of still, it's really no longer 52 skills, it's what, 80 some skills? How many have you done now, you think?
Actually, I kind of lost count. I think it's definitely in the 80s though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to in the foreseeable future? Any big projects you got going on?
Well, yeah, like the biggest one is, so I got a grant for $10,000 to create basically 52 skills on steroids. Mm. We're creating a TV pilot to take to different like producers and TV shows and different stuff like that to pitch to them as like, hey, like let's turn 52 skills into a show. So it's called How to Learn Anything. And the first episode of How to Learn Anything is me going from never having solved a Rubik's Cube before to solving it while skydiving. Hopefully that's the plan. yeah. So I'm currently able, after about like 3 weeks of practice, I'm currently able to solve a Rubik's Cube in about a minute and 10 seconds. I got to get it down to 50 seconds in like a week and a half. Which I think is doable. My hands are starting to get carpal tunnel, I think, but yeah, it's totally cool. So the whole thing of How to Learn Anything, just like 52 skills, will be like, look at this amazing stunt, but also like here's a guy learning stuff from scratch, who has no more talent than anyone else, and he's able to pull this thing off. So, the whole idea of like, hey, like this is a really cool thing, and you can do it too.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah.
You know that that again, that going back to Tim Ferriss, that sounds very similar to his Tim Ferriss experiment. So one of the things that he said about that was try to make sure that you keep as much hands on it as you can, because what happened with his show, and I don't even know if you heard about it, but it like got canceled with after like 5 episodes.
Yeah.
And it, what he said is that the producers, it became too much of their project, not so much of his. So when you do get to that level, I guess my recommendation through him would try to go through the, maybe even just keep it in the YouTube space as much as possible, or maybe even the Netflix space, if that makes sense. Because, yeah, you don't want too big of players getting their hands on it. So,
yeah, no, I totally hear you. And Tim Ferriss's show just felt way too much like TV. Like, it just felt like a reality TV show. And it was cool, but, like, I couldn't watch it, which gave me a lot of hope. Because I was like, hey, Tim Ferriss isn't, like, totally taken over this.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, and totally, nice. Totally. Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, though, is that you got to keep your own hands in it, man. You are the creator, and it's like, don't give it away too much. Otherwise, it isn't, as you just said, it isn't you anymore at that point.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, so. I agree. Yeah.
Because we like you, Stephen. Yeah. You should just, like, keep doing you.
Well, thank you.
Well, it's true. Yeah. And also, I mean, I would say, like, you just have this awesome way of, like, expressing yourself through what it is that you're doing that keeps people hooked. And if that were to be taken away, then it's like we totally lose that connection to you. And, like, you're just a fun dude to be around. So, like, that's kind of the point.
Right.
Yeah, so. Sweet.
Exactly. Well, I think we're probably about that point where we can go into the rapid fire questions here.
Yeah.
So you ready for that?
Let's do it.
All right, man. First one, who are 3 thought leaders that you've recommended to other people to check out the most?
Casey Neistat, Tim Ferriss, and Neil Strauss.
Neil Strauss.
Love that guy. He's such a good writer.
Cool.
Yeah.
3 truths you've learned over time that you'd share with others.
I'm going to qualify this by saying I recognize that I'm a 23-year-old dude who hasn't had an incredible amount of life experience. But from the experience I've had so far, is 3 truths. Be good to people and work hard, and things will probably work out for you. The second truth is that privilege is real, and it's really important to recognize that. Wherever you are in life, especially if you're listening in from North America, depending on what sort of economic situation you're in or what gender you are, privilege does exist, and it's very important to take that into account whenever you're thinking about the position that other people are in. And then what would be like a third truth? I have such a hard time with universal truths. JC, it's just like, if I learned anything from my arts degree, it's like nothing is universal. So I'd say the third thing is that nothing is universal.
There you go. Like that.
Yeah.
If you were going to place any ad on social media, cost free, mind you, what would it say and which platform would you use?
Any ad on social media, so like I'm not making money off of this ad?
Right. It's not necessarily one that's going to be for your business, right?
Yeah. Okay. It would be do more and check out my YouTube channel.
Cool. And what platform?
Probably Facebook.
Okay. But easy enough. What is the number one book that you happen to give others or gift to others, as Tim would say?
I don't gift a lot of books to others, to be totally honest with you. But if I was to suggest a book to read to anyone, it would be The Lean Startup if they wanted to start a business of any kind.
Okay. What is something you believed as an 18-year-old that you'd now tell yourself is bogus, and why?
That there are a lot of women that are attracted to you. At 18, I believed that all women should be attracted to me. And then now it's become very clear that that is not true, but that doesn't mean that there aren't amazing women that can also be attracted to you. And here's a different answer. I'll give a different answer, more related to 52 skills. But that is a big takeaway. For whatever reason, when I was 18, I believed that like every woman should be attracted to me. And then now
that's
it's
pretty
like
good, man. That's some good confidence there. I like that.
and then now it's like, no, like that makes zero sense. I'm an okay looking guy who's like fairly short. And it's like, no, not every woman should be attracted to me, but that doesn't mean that there isn't like that. There aren't going to be women that are attracted to you. There's a special flower for everyone out there. But like an answer more related to 52 skills, I guess, is that failure is a good thing. That would be probably the biggest difference from the age of 18 to now is that I embrace failure rather than I'm scared of it. Hmm.
When you think of the word success, who comes to mind and why?
Success.
And it can't be yourself.
Yeah. No, I'm so far from that word. I can't even.
You'd be surprised at how many people they have a very particular definition of success, and they're like, "Oh, myself," and I'm like, "Okay, I guess that's like, one way to
shut up, get out of your own fucking world, man." It's like, we get it. You think you're hot shit. Just shut up. Anyways, no. I think as soon as I consider myself a success, life will become very boring. So I hope to never consider myself a success. But if I was to think about like other people that I view successful or that I would like look up to, romantically, and I would say from like a social standpoint, my dad is extremely successful. So I look up to him, from that point of view. Financial success, I think, is something that I'm still really struggling with, is to, like, I don't know if I want to be a millionaire or be a really granola person living out in the forests of BC raising a family. I still haven't decided if I want to do that, which way I want to go. So I don't know if I can really define financial success and connect that to one person, but I think that the lifestyle that I like to model myself off of would be like, I know it's cliche, but Tim Ferriss has a good lifestyle as far as like work goes. I don't know if it's great as far as like romantic life goes or social life goes. It's pretty hard to tell, but like the world that Tim Ferriss has built around him seems to be really good. And then like romantically and socially, definitely my dad, I would look up to a lot in that area. And then entrepreneurially, I haven't found anyone that can really inspire me in a way that I want to say I want to be exactly like you. I can be hypercritical when it comes to picking my mentors. So
yeah, there's one movie that just came out that was just launched. Today's what, the first? Is today the first? So came out yesterday, called The Abundance Code. And if you get a chance to check that out, and if you haven't already, because it was actually free for a week, I would do that for sure.
Nice.
So if someone wanted to be like you, where could they learn more about you and create their own 52 Skills adventures?
Well, they could check out 52skills.com or just type 52 Skills with a Z into YouTube. Z for the American listeners who don't know what Z is. It is not a prophylactic or anything like that, I promise. and for people who want to, I guess, be more like me, if you're tall, just like cut off like 6 inches off your legs. If you aren't funny, try and be funny, because I try very hard to be funny. If you I don't know. I was just pulling for strings. I don't know if that's gonna work.
All right, let's rehash this one again.
Let's do that again. Yeah.
All right.
Take two.
All right. So what are four resources? Just think about that, like in your head. Okay. So if someone wanted to be
to be more like Stephen Robinson of 52 Skills.
Yes.
Yeah. So I would check out 52skills.com, check out my YouTube channel. Read the Lean Startup and read the 4-Hour Workweek, and then you'll be in the mindset of Stephen Robinson.
Nice.
also, read On Writing Well and Winning the Story Wars. Those are also two really fantastic books.
Awesome. All right.
Well, thanks so much for coming on today, Stephen. It was like total pleasure to talk to you, catch up, hear all the projects that you're working on, and especially with 52 Skills, where you're headed with this vision. I'm stoked.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm super stoked too.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely a pleasure, and look forward to all the stuff that you were doing, man.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
All right, everyone, there you have it. Stephen is a great inspiration and has plenty of positive energy. Lots of that Canadian vibe was going on in that conversation. And, you know, the thing is that they always seem to be so cheerful and so helpful. And I don't think Stephen is any different. Don't forget, you can check him out on YouTube. And that link, among others, will be available on the show notes at newinceptions.com/session47. Other ways of connecting with him and the show note extras will be there as well. Show note extras for the show include his TEDx talk, an interview with Zephan Blacksburg, a cross show that he did with Alex Hilliard of Stump Kitchen, which happens to be a quirky cooking series on YouTube. And there's also my favorite skill that he's released thus far, which is a bit of a survivalist and a bit techie. And I think those of you who kind of know my background in engineering might kind of see why I have an appreciation for that particular skill. So that's pretty much it for session 47. In next week's session of the Angles of Latitude podcast, you'll be able to join me again for a talk with Brandon Northwick. Brandon is someone who knows his online sales strategies, and like the dailies of session 19, he and his wife work at their family business together. In this tactic-packed session, Brandon and I will be talking about his current and past business experiences, and while he's packed into what he teaches his clients today, including what he's learned about the differences of traffic, leads, and sales in business. So if you're struggling with sales in your business, online or otherwise, or you're simply wondering how you might be able to work with your spouse as a business team, then you'll definitely want to check this next session out. So that's pretty much it, gang. I really appreciate you for listening to today's session, wherever you are, whether you're in the car, working out, or simply going for a walk, which is when I tend to listen to a lot of my podcasts. Thank you so much for being in today's chat with us. So until next time, dig in, have fun, take care, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web @newinceptions.com.